This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
...7:05 in the evening, and our first story this hour is about private-public partnerships. And it's in relation actually pretty directly to Hannah Yeo, Deputy Minister of Women, Family and Community Development, who said that government agencies just aren't able to provide medical assistance to the undocumented community living in Kuala Lumpur.
So she said the point that you... She made the point that you have to be Malaysian to get monthly allowances from the Social Welfare Department, adding that we can't use taxpayers' money for non-nationals. But she did say that NGOs can go beyond the limitations of the government, basically filling in the administrative gaps where the government isn't as strong or present.
So I actually first heard the deputy minister saying this at a BFM event, of all
right.
things, because she attended a town hall with the Minister of Health last year. Yes, that's right, last year. And it was at one of our health and living events. And she basically made the point that it is really important for NGOs to fulfill this role. And at the time, she went on to say that partly because the government in question is a new government, still is actually, and that the NGOs very often have been working within these communities and in these spaces for a long time. So they've earned and gained a lot of information. They've earned and gained a lot of trust within the community. And therefore, I think what the ministry was asking for help with was, if you want to be able to provide for the community, help us, help you, help them. So it was kind of, that was the message. And so this is in many ways the same thing.
Yeah, though sometimes my discomfort with, I appreciate the honesty, but my discomfort with it is that it does seem as if the government is shaking its hands off a bit from issues that they do need to deal with, because ultimately the goals of NGOs is to only fill that gap until they don't need to exist anymore. So they exist to fill in gaps where there might be lack of services, a lack of knowledge, info or finances. So while I appreciate the optics on this, that the government is saying, okay, we can't use Malaysian taxpayers' money to fund non-nationals, okay, because the optics of it would look a bit off, I guess.
It depends where you're standing from. So I think it depends where you're looking at it from, because to me, the optics aren't that bad in the sense that they are giving due credit and due shine to organizations that have been working in these spaces for a long time. So
sure.
To me, it's more an acknowledgement of, hey, NGOs, I know you know what you're doing. So, you know, I'm going to kind of empower and entrust you with doing these things. My discomfort actually stems from a different thing, which is that NGOs are either chronically underfunded, or there's often talk also about financial management, not necessarily mismanagement, just in terms of how well money is dispersed, how well... how basically money issues are what NGOs tend to come and rub up against.
Yeah.
So I am a little bit concerned from that point of view, that when you are requesting for NGOs to get involved in this very direct way and saying like, hey, use your capital, both literal and figurative, use your social capital and also use your capital to help these communities that I cannot help. I just wonder then in that instance, what support is public giving the private? What support
right.
is the government giving to NGOs? So that's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, and more cynically, I guess, does that mean that the government will then only focus on those that might be on communities that are more politically beneficial as opposed to those who are more underrepresented in the country?
Yeah, absolutely. So while I don't have at all any problem at all with what YB Hannah has said, I think that it's a good thing overall. I guess I just have some questions about the logistics of the thing. You know, I think the optics are fine. It's the logistics
right.
for me. It's like, how are these NGOs being supported if they're doing this important work of supporting communities that the government feel like at this point they can't really touch or they can't really help?
And also for how long necessarily, right?
Yeah.
Because if these organizational development skills are like a muscle, you have to continuously work in. If it isn't there, you have to start working it out. So if they don't begin working on it now, how long will these NGOs have to continue to fill that gap when we just want the government to be able to be one day fulfill that role.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to be speaking after this with Mohammad Syed Al-Hudzari, the General Manager for Program Operations at Mercy Malaysia. Most recently, we spoke to him about Pasir Gudang, of course. If you have any thoughts on public-private partnerships, specifically in terms of how it helps vulnerable communities, how NGOs can help to fill that role, are you comfortable with that? Do you think that NGOs need more support in this? Call us and let us know. 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 7:11 in the evening. Sorry, just really happy to say that. You're listening to Lynn and Kelvin, and we're talking about public-private partnerships, specifically how the government and NGOs can work together to help fill social gaps. This is coming after Hannah Yeo, Deputy Minister of Women, Family and Community Development, said government agencies aren't necessarily able to provide medical assistance to the undocumented, so NGOs can come and sort of help to plug that hole. And to understand how these sorts of partnerships would work. Joining us on the line is Mohammad Syed Al-Hudzari, General Manager for Program Operations at Mercy Malaysia. Syed, thanks for joining us. How do public-private partnerships between the government and NGOs typically happen, and how do they work?
Basically, government agencies, they have like their own specific mandate. So we also have our own mandate. You know, some of the CSO, have a mandate in terms of education, in terms of healthcare. So for Mercy Malaysia, our mandate is in terms of healthcare. We have been doing healthcare program for the past 20 years. So in Malaysia, we do like mobile clinic, you know, healthcare programs, primary healthcare, health awareness, hygiene awareness programs for the communities, trying to complement the government in places where the services are not available or places where services cannot be reached by the community. So we go there, we do an outreach, basically to serve these people. So the partnership will exist usually if there are interests, by the government, by the corporate sector, or anyone who have like an interest to serve certain communities. That's how these tie-up come into existence.
And once those interests align, what sort of support does the government bring to the table?
It would depend on the type of partnership. We will usually share, resources. Either they bring in the funding, or we get the funding from somewhere else, or they bring in the resources in terms of human resources, or they support the partnership through the types of assistance that they could provide, in terms of logistics and all. But when we talk about, partnership, both parties will have to, bring in something to the partnership in order to make it work and in order for them to achieve the goal that, that we intend to achieve in the partnership.
Looking at NGOs specifically, how do NGOs identify specific areas and communities that would be able to benefit from these partnerships?
In the context of Malaysia, it is not really that easy because we cannot just go anywhere and then offer something to the public. Of course, the first thing that you need to do before you come up with the programming is to assess the needs of the people. We cannot really come up with any programming just like that because it will just be a waste of resources. And how do we identify those needs? We have to talk to the government, the local authority, to the people themselves to identify what are the needs in their area. And then from there, we will design, we will identify, the gaps, what are the governments providing or what they cannot provide in the area. And then from there, only then we can come up with a solution. We will only provide, something that is not being provided by the other entity. So if the government cannot provide like certain services to these communities, this is where we will come into place. It's where, our role is more needed, in serving the communities.
Could you give us an example of tie-ups that Mercy Malaysia have had with the government?
Okay, an example. I think this commonly, happens in Sabah and Sarawak, whereby there's a lot of rural communities. It's not like the government cannot really reach them. They can, but because of the way people live there, the populations, they are quite far from each other. So it doesn't make sense, for the government to really have like one healthcare center for each community, even though the number is, you know, is small. So what they do, usually they have a big, you know, health center or, you know, clinic, and then their team will be mobilized, you know, from time to time to these different villages. Since they are not able to visit like this area like regularly, so we'll cover part of the area so that they can spend their resources in covering like some of the other area, so that the community will still receive, you know, quality services, better services in the, you know, amount of time that they require to receive the services. So yeah, I mean, usually it's in the rural area. It happens as well in the urban area in KL, you know, especially for the urban poor. So the need is there, and then the services is there as well. But then the situation is really different when it comes to the urban area, because populations are more dense, you know. You have like quite number of healthcare centers, hospitals and all, but then to compare with the number of populations, you know, in that existed in that one location, it is also, I mean, an issue for the government to provide services, or even, you know, for the community to get services in the short period of time. So that's why usually if you go to the government hospitals, I mean, you have to wait for hours to receive services. This is where I would say, I mean, the gaps are. So wherever there's these gaps, you know, we will try to assist the government to provide it to them.
So Hannah Yeo said that NGOs can go beyond the limitations of the government in terms of how they would be able to provide access to healthcare. Without these partnerships, how would these unaddressed areas receive the necessary attention?
The thing is, there are quite a number of NGOs providing, you know, these services to the community. But what is lacking right now is more in terms of coordination. So you can have, you know, I mean, hundreds of NGOs doing, you know, healthcare services, maybe to the same communities, but, you know, the impact may not be there at all even. Because if it is treated as a piecemeal project kind of a thing, then it will not provide, like, any impact to the communities. So the thing that is needed right now is a better coordination. I think maybe the government agencies need to bring NGOs on the same table and then discuss what are the needs, what are the gaps, and then what to find out what are the solutions. If this kind of discussion is not happening, doesn't matter how many NGOs are serving the communities, the end result will still be the same, whereby people will still receive the treatment, or they will get like symptomatic cures for their issues. But the bigger issue, or the bigger question, you know, in terms of access of healthcare to these communities are not being addressed properly. If there are no proper coordination between basically the government and also the NGO. So as long as there's an entity who is able to put everyone on the same table to discuss on the issues and solutions, I'm sure the partnership is more durable, it's more robust, and, you know, we can achieve more.
Do you think that private-public partnerships are a good long-term solution?
I would say yes, public-private partnership would be a long-term solution, because I do believe that, you know, there's no one entity that could really provide the entire solution to everyone. However, I think what is needed is, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, proper coordination, and then to bring all these people, NGO, these corporate partners, the government to discuss on the solution. Secondly, I think we should avoid, you know, the one-size-fits-all solution. So basically, it should start with the beneficiaries or the people we want to serve, and then it should end up with them, whereby the communities will also need to take charge so that, you know, whatever effort that is being offered by the government or the NGOs can be more sustainable in a way. Number three, funding. I mean, it's not like, you know, there's not enough funding going around. I mean, there are quite a number of institutions, including Zakat institution, that are providing funding, corporate CSR, public who would love to, you know, provide funding for this kind of project. But I believe if more in terms of the coordination of those funding, how it's being used and then how it's being managed, you know, we need to have like a better way of managing the funding, better way to administer it, to have a due diligence process in place in order for us to manage all these funding. Can you imagine, like, you know, there are quite a number of donors, corporate, zakat institution who wanted to give, to provide. But then at the end, I mean, we still end up with the same thing, you know. There are still healthcare issues, education issues are being discussed, I mean, years in and years out. So those are the things needed for us to really make the private and public partnership as a long-term solution.
So do you have any ideas as to how that coordination could be better achieved? Are there other countries, for instance, that have specific bodies or systems in place for this?
In other countries, I mean, I've been to, you know, a few places where this public-private partnership is being implemented as part of their policy. I can give you an example like the Philippines or Cambodia, whereby, you know, the government do acknowledge NGOs because they know that they alone, they cannot really serve all the population that they have within their country. So they are aware there are gaps in this area whereby the government do not have the resources to provide it. But then the discussion happens, so they know what they need to address and how they need to address it, and then what resources they can use, you know, to really make the partnership work. But then again, I mean, even in Malaysia, Mercy Malaysia has been working in Sabah for many, many years. So we have been complementing, you know, the state government, the state health department in providing healthcare to the rural communities. Earlier, you know, when we started to provide these services, I mean, we have been covering like more areas. But over the years, the number of areas that we have been providing the services, I mean, has reduced because government have more resources, so they are able to provide the services in the areas they were not able to provide before. So the partnership, I mean, really works. I mean, even in Malaysia, once they have enough resources, we can actually redeploy our resources to somewhere else, somewhere that is more needed to serve like other communities.
Syed, thank you very much for those insights. That was Mohammad Syed Al-Azhari, the General Manager for Program Operations at Mercy Malaysia, talking about private-public partnerships. This is coming about because, of course, YB Hanayo recently said that NGOs are able to go into areas and help communities that the government really just kind of can't access at this point in time, or can't access with taxpayer money, for example, undocumented folks. So we've been talking about that, and we've been asking you for your thoughts. Are you comfortable with this sort of partnership? Do you think that it really is the solution to being able to help a wider segment of society? You can call us 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a message here from Jason.
Besides the NGOs, big private conglomerates should play a role in providing financial and intellectual capital to the government. These are what actual CSR should be, rather than CSR that are driven as lip service. Private companies have the talent and specialization to aid the government.
So there are chunks of that that I agree with, but there are also some major issues. I think, for instance, the fact that this might be potentially become sort of another way for private companies and private conglomerates, especially the large ones, because they have a lot of money, to influence the government. I mean, there are ways and means by which that could be achieved. And so I would prefer, I think in this case, the separation of that.
Yeah, at what point does that funding become a way of buying influence, of affecting policy? Does that also, comes into question when it comes to funding specifically, whether it is just another way of political donations that could possibly go unchecked. I am all for, though, the suggestion for private companies to provide intellectual capital to the government.
Yes,
because that's
yes.
where a lot of that's also where a lot of consultants that do consult the government come from as well.
Yeah, it's you know, providing sacks of cash that I perhaps have, or writing giant checks that I'm a little less comfortable. I also wonder whether or not another way is for conglomerates to, if, I mean, the government is encouraging work with NGOs, then whether or not private companies would also then like to perhaps contribute more money to NGOs to aid their causes. I don't know whether that's another way of going about things. It's a little bit roundabout in terms of providing that help. But the point is, help goes somewhere.
Yeah. Then again, NGOs do sometimes also run into issues when it comes to getting funding to a point where, you know, does the work you do please your main funders? And does that change the relationship, right, where NGOs are supposed to be answerable to the communities they serve, but then with the big funding that comes, that relationship changes to being answerable to your investors instead?
I think basically what we're saying is that there are a lot of issues with the patronage system, is what it comes down to. Ken says, the Society of the Blind in Malaysia has been sending memorandums to the Ministry of Finance requesting certain schemes for OKU, but to no avail, including health insurance. If the government cannot provide for its citizens, how can it provide for non-citizens? It would not be fair. And Ken agreed, but the government is very specifically saying that it does not plan to provide for non-citizens. I think that was explicitly said by YB Hannah Yeo. But at the same time, she is still acknowledging that there is a need to provide some help to those communities, and that's where NGOs enter the picture.
Yeah, that's why she's been calling for the assistance of charities and NGOs. And that is the issue with the optics here, right? That NGOs, because they are seen as independent, not linked to the government, they are able to help those that are underrepresented or those who are less politically strong. And that's also with the case where you hear the government speaking a lot about the fact that they have little to no funds left. A lot of NGOs are saying, well, we are also receiving a lot less from the government right now because of the austerity measures that we're trying to take. So, yeah, it is also about the optics there.
You can keep those messages coming. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.